Welcome to The Lorraine Murphy Show. I'm an entrepreneur on my second business, a mentor, an author, wife to a fellow entrepreneur, and mother to a magical little girl. On my podcast, I explore topics that fascinate me that will help you unlock ideas to rise even higher in your life. Myself and my special guests will be talking entrepreneurship and how to build better businesses, organization and figuring out how to get more shit done quicker and smarter, staying in touch with our soul, and how to blend business babies with real babies. Let's jump in to this week's episode. Welcome to this week's episode of The Lorraine Murphy Show. You are very, very welcome. Please settle in and make yourself at home. This season of the show is all about LM life lessons, the greatest lessons I've learned and continue to learn, and the lessons that I share most with my mentees, event attendees, and online program participants. My special guest this week is Dr. Christy Goodwin, an author, speaker, and a guest trainer on my upcoming Create Academy program. Create Academy term starts next Friday, the 12th of June. If you haven't come across it yet, just jump onto my website, lorrainemurphy.com.au, and you'll find all the information there. In a nutshell, it's a six-week program with myself and two guest trainers, Helen Jacobs, who featured on the show last week, the wonderful Christy, who you're about to hear from, and yours truly as well. And it's very much geared at helping you unlock your own creativity and gain momentum on whatever creative projects may be burning a hole in your soul, as I like to say at the moment. And the reason for this episode this week is that creating some proactive strategies for how I interact with tech and social media has been a critical part of my growth over the years. And also it's been a critical part of me being able to create as prolifically as I do create. And I'm really learning that it needs to be a constantly evolving practice. I'm excited to tap into Christy's experience on this topic, as I see her as the leading thought leader on digital well-being, and she always teaches me something when I speak to her. In myself and Christy's chat, we cover what she sees as our digital dilemma, what infobesity is and what impact it has on our lives, mental health and productivity, why you shouldn't send sensitive emails at nighttime. I found this fascinating. How she believes attention management is the critical skill we all need to be working on in the society that we're living in. The simple changes we can make to the setup of our phones to minimize unfocused time on them. How creating more friction with our tech is a key step to maintaining our own boundaries. I made some big discoveries when she shared this in our chat. The link between tech and our own creativity. And also a peek at what she'll be sharing with Create Academy students. So all that said, let's jump into my chat with Dr. Christy Goodwin. Thank you so much for joining me, Dr. Christy Goodwin. I'm so excited to have you on the podcast. Again, you're in the first season and now you're in the sixth season. So thank you so much for joining me today.
It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. And we're obviously collaborating on Create Academy as well, which I'm really excited about. And we'll touch a bit on that, I'm sure, in our chat as well. So, Christy, as you know, this season of the podcast is all about LM life lessons. So the greatest life lessons that I've learned and the ones that I continue to learn and pass on to my mentees and the people who attend my events and workshops and online programs as well. And I'm really excited to talk about this topic today because I think particularly now, I mean, as we're recording this, we're coming out the other end of ISO, thankfully, in Australia. And I think, I mean, tech has played such an amazing role for so many of us in our lives and our works to help us all stay connected and actually be productive. But I think also there's this flip side to the coin where it can affect our productivity quite significantly and, of course, our creativity and our ability to think big and do great things. So I want to ask you, why is it important to focus on how we're consuming tech? Like, what are the benefits to us being a bit more, I guess, mindful or intentional about tech? And sorry, can I just say, I think with tech, maybe if we just use that as a bit of a catch-all term for this chat, we're talking about social media, technology, online consumption. Yes, am I right?
That's fine. That works for me, yes. So we can use that global term. And I think what you described is something, I call it the digital dilemma. You know, we have this sort of love-hate relationship with technology. I often say it's a bit like my husband. Couldn't imagine living without him. But sometimes it's really challenging to live with technology. So I think we wrestle with all the benefits and the affordances and the ease that technology brings all of our lives. But then the flip side is some of those dilemmas about, you know, why do we find it so hard to switch off? Why are we constantly feeling like we have to be tethered to our devices? So I think you're not alone in these big life lessons you're learning. In our defense, we're the first generation of people who are living and working in this complete, I call it a tsunami of screens. Our daily lives are saturated with technology. In fact, we use technology from the womb to the tomb. And so we're struggling with
it. Can I just say, I love interviewing you because you've got so many gold nuggets like that. The womb to the tomb. I love it.
There was a study that was done on email habits. And what this study, they did a whole lot of quantitative data and then they did some qualitative interviews with people. And what they found literally is that people are using email in delivery suites, either the person, I couldn't imagine personally myself giving birth and checking my inbox, but perhaps it's partners checking their inboxes in the delivery suite. But we're literally using it from the minute we're born to even at death when we're at people's funerals. So technology, I think, just goes to show how much it has permeated all of our lives. And as you said, you know, it brings us so many benefits and it's not about demonizing technology, but we find it really hard to manage it because, as I said, we're the first generation of people who are coming up. I guess we're coming up with the guidebook or the rules about how we live and operate in healthy ways. You know, my message is never about digital abstinence because that's just completely unrealistic, but it's about how do we use it. And I think why do we need to focus, as you said, on what we're consuming? We are living in an age of infobesity. We are literally consuming so much information. In fact, a study told us that the average adult now consumes 3.2 gigabytes of data every single day. That is just
holy crap, that is terrifying.
If you think about what you're consuming on email, on social media, on Google searches, through your personal media consumption, you know, watching live streaming or television programming. So that's a huge amount. And our brain, we have ancient Paleolithic brains and they haven't evolved to cope with that constant onslaught of information. So, and I think one of the things we've learned through this health pandemic is that we really have to be critical consumers. We've got to fact check and we've got to validate what we're consuming and we need to seek reliable sources because our brains, the human brain has a negativity bias. So that means we are hardwired to look for negative things. Now, unfortunately, and I've heard you use this this catchphrase before, Lorraine, about how the media operates, you know, that awful saying, if it bleeds, it leads. Mm-hmm. And we know that the media prey on this psychological vulnerability of a negativity bias. So this is a problem because in our brain we have something called the, I'm sure you've heard of this before, the reticular activating system. It's your RAS. Mm-hmm. And it's basically a bundle of nerves at our brainstem and it filters out unnecessary information so only the important stuff gets through. So it's a really important part of our brain for our a capacity to pay attention. So this is why you hear a new word and then you'll start hearing that new word everywhere. Or you go to look for a new car and you go and see that type of car everywhere when you're driving around. So this part of our brain has been designed to keep us safe and to keep us evolving as humans. And it really helps us take what we're focusing on and creates a filter for it. So it's sifting through all the data, and you can imagine now how much data we are processing, and presents only the pieces of information that are important to us. Now, all of this happens obviously without us even knowing. You know, we don't wake up and think I'll activate my RAS and start it, get it filtering the information. And it really works to try and favor our brain, which is great. However, the problem is if we are constantly bombarding ourselves with, you know, demoralizing and upsetting news headlines, if we're scrolling social media and seeing upsetting things, if our inbox is overflowing with, you know, demands and concerns, what we're doing in our brain is firing up our amygdala. And our amygdala is sort of the emotional hub of our brain. And it's basically becoming hijacked by the social media and the news feeds that we're consuming. And so we're indulging in our problems. Now, this is amplified because of the Google recommendation algorithm. You know, you only need to ever search for one dieting video or tip. You only, and this is where for young people it's problematic, they only need to look up one, you know, video or information on self-harm and what starts to populate their feed and their sponsored posts is more and more of that content. So we just have to be such critical consumers of what comes into our world, because it can be problematic. Another thing that I think we need to be really conscious of, and I think, tell me I'm not the only one that experiences techno stress. You know, we log in.
100%. Yeah,
and there's a, you know, I've talked to you before about this condition called email apnea, where we've literally done studies, we've hooked people up and watched what happens to them physiologically when they check their inboxes. And our heart rate accelerates, our breathing becomes more shallow, our pupils dilate. So what we're basically doing is triggering that fight, flight or flee response. We're activating that sympathetic nervous system, and we can become quite, you know, panicked. And so this can really elevate our stress levels. And there's a really fascinating body of research that's just in its infancy. And it's talking about the relationship between stress and our immunity. They're calling it psychoneuroimmunology, which is a fascinating study that basically looks at the links between our central nervous system and our immune system. So we know that when we're in this stress state, and we can activate this stress state so easily when we are plugged in and switched on, and especially if we never have respite from that.
So can I just add a layer to that as well, Christy? I think it's extra challenging right now because there's so much happening in the world. We've been, you know, going through Australian bushfires for the first kind of month of this year, and obviously the months at the end of last year. Then we went into a global pandemic, which has been, you know, 2 or 3 months. And I know for me, particularly in the first kind of 3 weeks, I was checking the news all the time. And I really do tend to opt out of mainstream media as much as possible, but I was checking it. And right now we're in the middle of a period of incredible unrest over in the US, and it sounds like it's going to be more global as well. So, you know, you get into the habit then of checking the news because you want to know what's going on. And it's almost like amplifying that stress even more. So I think it's so valuable what you're saying, and that it's 10 times more valuable right now, given how much is happening and also how much content and information is coming our way about these various different issues at the moment as well.
Yeah. And I wanted to add there, it's not about saying, you know, don't, you know, seek this information, because I think many of us need, and that's why I think we also have that love-hate relationship with technology. We want to, particularly social media, we want to know what's going on, but at the same time, we want to distance ourselves. You know, we want to know because we are biologically wired to have connection. You know, we are hardwired to be part of a tribe, so we want to know. But at the same time, I think we have that inner knowing that we want to shield ourselves from constantly hearing, you know, all the perils and the doom and gloom. So one of the really practical strategies that I suggest to people is time when you consume your technology. So, you know, avoid, if you're already in a stress state, say you've had an argument with your partner, or, you know, you had a heated discussion with one of your kids before they left, your stress is already elevated. So be really mindful about what online activities you then engage in, because you can definitely increase that exponentially. And the other times I say is to be really careful about bookending your day with technology. You know, when you wake up first thing in the morning, and so many of us do it, you know, our phone is often, for many of us, our default alarm clock, and it is so easy and seamless for us to roll over. In fact, research tells us about 90% of us reach for our phone before our partner. So we roll over and we start the scroll, and already, you know, our feet haven't even touched the floor, and we've already activated that limbic system in our brain that triggers that stress response. Equally,
and I have to say, Christy, with that, with the morning, just before you jump onto the nighttime period, I know for me, the morning, my phone doesn't go on. I time my meditations, but it's on flight mode. Perfect. And my phone doesn't go on until normally till after breakfast. But I think that's been a huge learning for me, given this is LM life lessons. And I talk a lot when I'm training people around the organizational space, is that we tend to either be in proactive mode or reactive mode. And a lot of us spend a huge amount of time reacting, whether it's to traffic or kids or partners or work deadlines or whatever's happening. And I think with our social media and our tech, I think it's one of the areas that we have more choice whether or not we want to be more proactive or reactive. And for many of us, you know, if you say 90% of people are waking up and reaching straight for their phone before their partner in the morning, you're straight away, you're kicking into proactive mode. And then that almost like sets the tone for your brain and your body and your energetic system for the whole day. So I think that's so powerful what you've just said. And thank you for saying that, because I think the morning is critical. That's when we set the standard for what our whole day is going to be like. So if you set the standard with, half an hour of quiet time, you know, and when I say quiet time, it doesn't need to be, you know, meditating on a log somewhere in a forest. It's just about having some time that's not plugged into our tech and reacting to all the messages coming our way. So I think that's really powerful. So yes, I wanted to add to that. And if you want to talk about the evening then, I think you were going to say before I really interrupted you.
And I know, and I love this conversation because I often say, and it sounds so easy, you know, don't reach for your phone. And I'm the first to admit it is challenging, especially if we think we need to check it to sort of give us some breathing space to get on top of our inbox before we get to work. But I will say it has a profound impact on your well-being and performance if you can manage to avoid it. I often say the basics work if you work the basics. Mm-hmm. And it really does make a difference. So the other time, as you suggested, is at night. Obviously, for sleep, we know scrolling on our devices, looking at our laptops, these all emit blue light, and blue light suppresses our body producing melatonin, which helps with our sleep. And we have a sleep epidemic, a health epidemic here in Australia, with both children, primary school, adolescents and adults not getting sufficient sleep. This is one of the reasons, I believe, just one, it's certainly not the only reason, why we have got really serious mental health issues in our country, because inadequate sleep is so intimately, and the research corroborates this, is so intimately linked with our mental well-being and mental health.
Yeah.
So
I couldn't agree more. I am crazy on no sleep, and I have to say this has been an ongoing challenge with myself and Wade for the last year, because I know I need 7 hours. I mean, we all need sleep, of course. However, he's ex-military, so he can just push through, you know, and just go on 4, 5, 6 hours sleep a night. And I definitely notice a really clear correlation between my mood and how much sleep I've had. But I mean, this is just sounds like no shit, Sherlock. But it's true, you know, we think that we can just hijack that part of our, you know, our core well-being, and it really does affect so much. So, yes, I fully subscribe to what you're saying.
Yeah, and it's not just, I mean, it obviously affects mental well-being. We firsthand experience that, you know, I'm tired and grumpy when I've had inadequate sleep. But the other part is that it affects our productivity. You know, you cannot operate at peak performance when you are tired. And I think this is one of the biggest reasons why we've seen, the data is telling us we've seen prior to COVID, but we saw a definite decline in productivity. And I think, again, this is one of the many reasons why. The other reason we say at night is because the part of our brain, the logical part, it's called the prefrontal cortex, at night it's basically worn out. It's tired. It's time for it to disconnect. And so the part of our brain that helps us make good decisions, helps us problem solve, think critically and analytically turns off, and that amygdala, that emotional center, fires up. And so this is why we might send a terse reply if we're dealing with emails late at night. You know, we might post a comment on social media that was intended to be, you know, polite but perhaps was a little rude. And so it's just a recipe for disaster. So it's obviously for sleep, but also, again, for our output and our performance and our well-being as well. So trying not to bookend your day with technology, knowing what the potential perils are if we are doing it.
Yeah, totally get it. Okay, so what do you think? So with the work that you do, so you obviously are an incredible speaker. You do a lot of online workshops, seminars, in-person seminars when you're not in ISO life. What do you see as the biggest challenge that people have when it comes to improving their digital well-being?
I'm going to tell you the two, and they're closely linked.
Yeah, please.
The first one is our digital dependence, and the second one are digital distractions. So many people, whether they're high-performing professionals, you know, C-suite executives, health professionals, I mean, I call it the digital pool. None of us are immune. Technology is psychologically appealing. This is why we have little kids that throw techno tantrums when we switch them off, and why we find it hard to unplug and disconnect. Why is it? People are often asking me, why can't I stop the scroll? And I think technology has become ingrained in our habits, and we've started, I believe, as a society to justify it because we look around and say, well, everybody else is.
Everyone else is doing it. It's so true. Yeah, and how many times has that happened where you're, well, I'm sitting on a bus, or I'm sitting in a co-working space waiting for my meeting to arrive, and I'm sitting there kind of quite happy with my own company. And I look around and I see that everyone else is on the phone, and immediately then I have this urge to go and pick up my phone because it's almost like everyone else is modeling that behavior. I'm like, what's wrong with me? Why am I doing it?
Yes.
I love that you shared that. So true.
This effect. But I think we've justified it in that way. And the other way we justify it is that we say, well, I need to be tethered to my tech because I need it for work. You know, I need to be contactable. I need to be responding to emails. And I often challenge those two assertions. But I often explain it's through no fault of our own. We have developed some of these digital dependencies, and I'm very careful. I don't believe for most of us, we're addicted to technology. Mm. But there are so many persuasive design techniques that have been deployed to make the technologies that we use and love so appealing. You know, one of the key things is the autoplay feature. Netflix and YouTube and a lot of streaming services now have the autoplay feature set as the default setting. And so this is why I call it the state of insufficiency. The online world is a bottomless bowl. There's no stopping. Mm. There's no end point. And so many of us find it so hard to switch off because it just keeps going and going. You know, mm. we refresh our social media feeds and we do it. Have you ever stopped to think of the way we refresh our feed? It's like pulling the lever on a poker machine. You know, you pull down. That's such a deliberate design technique. You know, we have metrics that tell us how many unread emails we have and how many notifications we have on our device. So a whole, you know, there's so many of these very subtle but deliberate design techniques that yeah. make
so us. Christy, just to pause you there, so with the when you say the autoplay feature, is that so myself and Wade are obsessed with normal people right now? So when we're watching that, and that's when, so we're watching that on Stan, that's when Stan just automatically rolls into the next episode without us actually having exactly. to go and do anything about it.
Yep.
You yep. know, that is so funny that you said that, because there's been several occasions where I've just gone, actually, we should probably go to bed, and then Peaky Blinders was our mm-hmm. last show. We were like well into Peaky Blinders. And then when it starts, you're like, oh, we'll just watch 10 minutes. And then that's yeah. it then. That's the Netflix binge. You know, it's like the show is in charge and not you anymore. So it I just is. Wanted to clarify what you meant by the old play, because I yep. know this is the thing, and maybe this is kind of part of this conversation. I think it's interesting that I never once questioned that it just automatically rolls in. It's like it's built into the platform to keep you hooked in, and I never questioned that. I didn't even know I could switch that off. Can I? So I can go in Absolutely. And say...
But you have to now manually go into your settings and disable it. Whereas before, right. the autoplay feature was something that you would enable. So when they update things, yes. Because they're all the tech that we use are competing against each other. Tristan yeah. Harris is a fascinating ex-Google employee, and he talks about how we're living in the attention economy. And I agree, whether I'm speaking to parents or to professionals in corporations, when I'm asked what the skill of the 21st century is, without a shadow of a doubt, I say it's attention management. If you cannot control and direct and orient your attention, you are going to get seduced in the online world that has, you know, sensory seductions everywhere you look.
I've never heard that term, attention management. I love that. Yeah. So you, sorry, Chris, because I'm jumping all over the place, as I knew I would when you come on the show. So the two greatest challenges you see is, one, that digital dependency, and what you're saying is it's almost, without disempowering us as individuals, that mm-hmm. there is a certain amount of strategy working against us because these things are built, as in the platforms, the tech, yeah. the Instagrams, the Facebooks, they're built to keep us hooked in, essentially is what you're saying, yeah?
Yep. Definitely. And the second one I said was digital distractions, and again, through deliberate design techniques. But this is where I think we can start to take back some control. You know, we can, and it obviously, as you said, you know, going into your settings and disabling the autoplay feature requires more time on our behalf initially. But there are some things that we can do, you know, to tame our digital distractions. And we can talk about some of those, you know, I suggest batching notifications. Research studies have actually been done that found that you, rather than having no notifications whatsoever, because that creates FOMO, we start thinking about what we're missing out on. But a study was done that found that actually getting them batched at three nominated times throughout the day helps you from constantly being distracted and disrupted, but also gives you that reassurance that you're not missing out on anything critically.
That's really interesting. Yeah, because when I'm training people, I say no distractions. I say no notifications as part of my piece around nixing distractions. That's really interesting. Thank you.
Well, and I would say no. When I talk often, I what I'm going to say here is that when you have to do focused work, Cal Newport talks about deep work. So they're, you know, the challenging tasks that you need to do where you're free from distraction. You know, it might be analyzing data, writing a report, preparing a presentation, anything that requires a bit of mental grunt. That's when I suggest you have no notifications whatsoever. That's when I talk about building a fortress around your focus. What can you do during those periods of time? And this is why I say to people, this is not an all or nothing approach. It's saying, okay, you need to get some work done, deep work. You don't want to be distracted. So what strategies can you put in place that will stop those distractions coming to you? So that's when I definitely agree that would be a strict no notification or alerts time then. Then I would say out of those windows, that's when you might say, look, I would rather get all my notifications come through when I'm sitting on the train coming home, if we ever go back to public transport frequently. But, you know, choosing the times of the day that work for you, when you know you're going to have the bandwidth, literally, probably technically bandwidth and mental bandwidth to respond to those notifications, but just choosing when they come to you. And this is the problem. Technology now comes to us. We have brains that were designed to go out and forage for information. We went out and hunted. We went out and gathered information. We flipped that. We've now got information that is constantly coming at us, and it's coming at us like a fire hose, and we've got brains that are basically the size of a, you know, a plastic cup or a coffee cup trying to catch.
That's such a good that just makes it so visual for me. Thank you. Yeah, it makes total sense.
Yeah. So where you can disable the distractions, and there's so many things, you know, maximizing your windows, turning your phone to do not disturb mode. There are really pragmatic, realistic solutions. So it's not about, you know, unrealistic pie in the sky kind of things. It's actually what can I do at a practical and realistic level.
Yeah, love that. Christy, can you, and you and I haven't spoken about this before, but I know you'll have an opinion on it. I read a really interesting, so I get Tim Ferriss's 5 Bullet Friday every Friday, which is a really, really brilliant newsletter to get. It's not really a newsletter. It's like just the stuff he finds interesting. And it kind of takes me ought to know a bit of a rabbit hole of interesting topics. And he shared a massive article. this guy, I think he's got a software business in the US, and he just looks like the world's biggest nerd. He's run this business from home forever. You know, this remote working thing isn't new to him. But I mean, sorry, I just have to share this for a second. I was reading it next to Wade. He was like, what the hell are you laughing at? So this guy realized that he's a total nerd, so he never goes outside. And he said, I need to go outside more. So he's actually created almost like, you know, and like old school American football games where they have the guys or the girls selling popcorn or ice creams, and they've got that like that tray that like hooks around their head. Do you know what I'm talking about? And they're selling drinks and stuff on this little tray.
Yep.
So he's created one of these, and he's got his freaking laptop on it, and he just walks through the woods doing his work. He's an absolute lunatic. I'll find the article and link to it. But anyway, he's got some very, very interesting stuff. And something he talks a lot about is like setting up your tech. So he talked about setting up your phone, for example. And sorry, I don't know if I'm just actually joining two articles together, but Tim Ferriss definitely shared it. And I actually made a list of like 10 actions, and I'm working my way through them in my notebook. But it's about, I know you talk about the grayscaling, for example, but it's also, and I thought this was a really interesting tip, setting up your iPhone so that on that first screen of all your icons that you haven't got your easy entertainment, like, for example, Netflix, Instagram, Facebook, whatever it might be, they don't live on that home screen. Instead, what you've got on that home screen is your development stuff, like your podcasts, your, I can't even think of another one now, but, you know, the deep, the learning, the kind of inverted commas, valuable education. I'm not saying Instagram and social can't teach us stuff too, they can. But it just means, and I think just touching back on what you're saying about that autoplay feature on the online streaming, as in the TV streaming, with that, it kind of takes away that few seconds where you go, actually, do I really want to watch another show? No, I don't. Let's just go to bed, or let's go do, you know, have a shower, do whatever you want to do. And I think just even that second that it takes to scroll across to another window on your phone, it just gives you a bit more time to be more in charge and say, I'm more considered, like, do I actually want to go and look at this stuff now? Yes. So do you have any tips on setting up your phone that we can actually help ourselves be more healthy when it comes to our tech?
Definitely. So you mentioned the grayscale one. Look it up. I will admit Instagram is nowhere near as exciting and appealing when you are scrolling in black and white. The strategy you just described, I call the proximity strategy, and it's that old saying, out of sight, out of mind. Often we unlock our phone to actually make a phone call, but we see the Instagram or the TikTok icon, and those icons, the color choice has been strategically designed. When Steve Jobs released the first iPod at one of his famous press releases, he said that he wanted those icons to be so appealing that users wanted to lick their screens.
Yes,
that tells you about the color choice. So what I suggest is remove, I call them your tech temptations off your home screen. And as you said, put them on the fifth screen of your phone. Hugh from the Resilience Project suggested adding another layer to that. He said, pop them in a folder and label the folder things I will later regret. And I love
that. That's powerful.
A pang. And as you said, it's just giving you that trigger. One of the reasons that we find it so hard and we slip, I often have people tell me, I just slipped into, you know, I was at a stuck point on my project or my report or my data analysis, and I just picked up my phone and I just slipped into whatever platform we gravitate towards. And one of the reasons we do that is because technology becomes frictionless. So what we need to do is create more friction. So putting it on the fifth slide of the phone. The other thing, you can actually remove apps off your phone, depending on what phone you've got, and you can only find them by searching for them. So the icon actually doesn't appear. The app's still there, but you can only access it through functioning. The easiest thing I have found, and I've tried this in recent weeks and it is so much better, is logging out of the app when you've finished with it. Because when you go back to use it, we justify it saying, I'll just do a quick 5-minute check. I'll do the just check. That friction of having to remember or enter your login and your password is enough to create that mental check. Do I want to go down this rabbit hole? And it also adds more time. So we're basically creating that friction to make it less appealing.
See, that's a problematic one for me because I can never remember my Instagram passwords. And I remember a couple occasions I texted AJ, my communications manager, to say, can you tell me my Instagram password? A bit of a problem. And can I just add one? And this is one that I love that you've learned, that login one, because one that I've learned is that if I'm on Instagram, and then I just, you know, hit the, I've got an iPhone, so I just click that little, whatever that little button on the right-hand side to, like, switch off my screen. Mm-hmm. What happens then is I open my phone again and I land straight into Instagram again, and it's that friction. So for me, I want to be more mindful about closing down Instagram.
Yes.
When I'm finished with it, because it's not going quite as far as you're going. But, yeah, otherwise I just land straight back in there, and then all of a sudden there's 4 minutes gone when I was actually picking up my phone to send Wade a text, for example.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's brilliant. Anything else in terms of any other really simple, I think you shared so many, any other simple and effective things that you think people could do to, as you say, create more friction with their tech without the headache?
Yeah, look, one that has, I'm midway through writing my next book, and I'm almost embarrassed to admit this, but one of the key ways that I've managed to get this done is actually by using an app called Forest. It works on iOS and Android devices. But basically what it lets you do is nominate a specific amount of time when you want to do focused, distraction-free work. If you manage to adhere to that time limit without picking up your phone and unlocking it, or perhaps it's a tablet device, it will reward you with a tree, and it grows for the longer time you stay online. And if you pick it up and reach for your tech temptation, it kills the tree. So it's gamified learning, and it is a really playful and engaging way to keep on track. One of the reasons, well, not one, but one of the many reasons why we find it hard not to use technology is that our brain looks for the easy option. It has been wired to look for rewards. And so often people say, I just don't have the willpower. And I will admit, I often don't have the willpower either. We gravitate towards tech because it gives us hits of dopamine and serotonin and all the pleasurable neurotransmitters. And it's usually the easy option. So that's why I sometimes say, use tech to your advantage. You know, put these tools in place. Maybe you use, if you're an Android user, use digital wellbeing. If you're an iOS user, you can use screen time, but you can actually create some rules and barriers that will actually prohibit you from using it, because often we just don't have the willpower to avoid it.
That's such a good tip. I'll link to that Forest app in the show notes, and I'm actually going to get it on my phone as well today. I never heard of that, so it's brilliant. So funnily enough, my next question for you is, what advice do you have for keeping on track with the digital health plan? And I think that's a brilliant one that you've just shared. Did you want to say something else on that one?
Yeah, sorry, I wanted to just jump in. Another tool that I use, and this works again on because some of these tools only work on smartphones, some only work on tablet devices. One that I found works on everything, and I have become a huge advocate, I've been using it for about 12 months, especially when I'm working on my laptop, is called Rescue Time. I installed Rescue Time.
I used to have it on an old computer, yes. How do you use it?
So I used it initially because I wanted to see where my time was going. I also work with Michelle Broadbent, who I know your listeners know.
Got her in common, yes.
And Michelle was challenging me, as she does in a very loving way, one time when she said, what are you doing with your time? Where's it going? And I thought, gee, good question. And so I installed Rescue Time, and it literally monitors and it gives you a report of where you're spending your time online. And it monitors it across all platforms, so smartphones, tablets.
Gold. So that's an update since I would have had it last, because I didn't find that effective because I was still doing stuff on my phone. And at that point, it only monitored your computer. That's gold. Thank you.
The whole range. But what I was absolutely mortified when I got my first weekly report and found that I was spending nearly 40%, you're going to kill me, Lorraine, of my time each week dealing with email.
I knew you were going to say that. So just for context for listeners, you and I, I've been a mentor to you over the years. And yeah, the email thing is our bugbear.
I have many things since then. It was the real slap in the face, because when I'm bemoaning the fact that I can't get any, deep work done, and I can't write the book and I can't create the program, it was really tangible and obvious. So the other thing you can do with Rescue Times is you can set goals. So you might say, I want to spend 4 hours a week on writing tasks. You can also set block out times. So you can actually nominate times when you don't want to be able to, jump onto social media or check news sites, or you can actually sort of create prohibition times, if that makes sense. So there's lots you can do. It's not the only tool out there. Some other people like Freedom, which is another equivalent. But I personally recommend Rescue Time, because it has brought me, in 12 months I have really revolutionized my time on email. And I'm happy to say my latest report last week came through and I was spending 9% of my time. Now I'm managing an extra inbox too at the moment. I've lost a team member because of this corona crisis, but I think that speaks volumes about, again, you often talk about where, what you track and you focus grows. So in this instance, it thankfully shrunk, but it was enough to just know where that time is going.
I love that. Love that. And also I think just what you were saying about the emails being reduced, and I share this quote a lot in different scenarios, but it's the Maya Angelou quote, and Oprah Winfrey uses a lot as well. It's that idea of when you know better, you do better. So while it stings to get a report saying that you're spending almost half of your productive time, I mean all of your time, because imagine this family task, you've got three boys, family tasks that you do on your tech as well. Almost half of your time spent online is being dealing with emails. I mean, that feels yuck when you find out.
Yeah,
but at least when you know it, you can do it rather than bumbling along. And I'm not saying you're bumbling along, we all do with different aspects of how we're spending our time online. And, we just don't improve it. So I love that. Thank you. Now, I want to ask you, so obviously you're going to be a guest trainer on Create Academy, which I'm super excited. And as I was saying to you just before we started recording, your lesson plan that you sent me last week was next level. I'm like, how are you pretty much fitting an entire course into 20 minutes? It's amazing what you've done. So thank you for putting so much in there. Can I ask you, because I think for some, if they're looking at Create Academy and they're looking at the six-week program, the whole idea of having an entire week around tech and managing our social media, our interaction with social media, might seem a bit like, what's this got to do with creativity? And I'll leave you to answer the question rather than me. Why is our tech so closely linked with our creativity and our ability to be creative?
I honestly think that technology can hijack our attention and distract us from doing the most important tasks that we want to do. So many of us claim that we don't have time, myself included, to write the book or to launch a course. But if we actually examine where we're spending our screen time, as I did over 12 months ago, and see just how much time we are dedicating to social media or to emails, we can start to pull back. So what I'm going to talk about in this course, the Create Academy, and the nerd in me, I'm a self-confessed nerd.
You really are.
University lecturer. So when you invited me to be almost like a guest lecturer, the inner nerd in me was doing somersaults. So
that's so cute. Love that.
Got the spectacles out, got my cardigan out, and I am ready to go.
Love.
But what I'm going to be talking about, and again, this is not anti-tech. It's not saying you're going to have to, you know, ban your phone and never use your laptop again. I hope my message is always realistic, research-based information.
And you live it yourself, which is what I love about your stuff. You know, you're not sitting in your ivory tower with no kids and no business and
no
commitments going, oh, why can't you just spend only 5 minutes a day on social media? You know, you get it. So I love, and I think you're definitely... You definitely walk that path for sure.
I do. And I have been very guilty during home isolation of dedicating some of my extra time to binge watching Netflix. I have found, I don't know if anyone else has found, we've gone off on a tangent here, Jane the Virgin. It is probably one of the trashiest but most engaging TV shows I have watched in a long time. So definitely guilty of engaging into
it. I haven't, but I will now find it.
It's terrible, but it's so terrible it's good. My husband.
Okay, got it.
And he techno shames me. He's often, I cannot believe you are watching this, Christy.
That's gold. Anyway,
it comes with that warning and vignette. So what I'm going to tackle in the academy is understanding how we can create our own personal digital boundaries so that we can stop distractions from hijacking our creativity. So I'm going to help people understand in more detail why we find it hard to stop the scroll, but then again with practical strategies. So I'm going to share what I think is the simplest, easiest, but most profound, I call them a neuro hack, but basically a way our brain works, understanding if you can know how your brain works, then you can time when you're not going to be distracted and your output will grow exponentially. I have been utilizing this strategy for just on 12 months now and my output has grown exponentially. And the third thing I'm going to tackle is how our digital behaviors and habits can create a better environment for our creativity. So I'm going to talk about things like our digital clutter, you know, even just seeing icons on your desktop or subscribing to multiple newsletters. We think that they're sort of benign things, but they really have a significant impact on our mental load.
Well, they take up real estate. You know, it might just be a small amount of real estate, but they're taking it up still.
Yeah. And the last thing I'm going to talk about is why, if we want to bring creative projects to life, we need opportunities for digital disconnection. We need to unplug and disconnect because I don't know about you, Lorraine, but for me, I have my best ideas when I used to travel on a plane.
I know, me too. Notebook comes out, off I go. Yes, totally get it.
And we need those moments of white space. But today in this always on digital world, we fill our white space with our screens. And so we never get to offer or enter. Neuroscientists call it the mind wandering mode. It's what they call the default mode of thinking. And we never get to enter that state now if we are constantly tethered to our screens. So we need opportunities for boredom. We need opportunities because this is when we come up with creative ideas, we solve problems, and it doesn't have to be on an aeroplane. It might be in the shower or it might be on a run or a swim or time in nature. There's so much evidence coming out that tells us that time in nature is vital for our well-being and our output as well. So we'll talk about why disconnection is important and how you can actually make that work in a realistic world.
Amazing. I love that. And I think the quote that kind of triggered me into reaching out to you about Create Academy was, a few people I follow had shared it, and Melissa Ambrosini had shared it, and I'd seen it in a few other places, but that whole idea of create before you consume, and so many of us are consuming everyone else's content, and I'm not saying creating is just content, but we're consuming what everyone else is putting out there before actually creating our own. So it's almost like, how do we put the cart before the horse again? And I think that's where you're going to be adding so much gold to Create Academy peeps from next week. very exciting.
Excited. And I think so many Amazing. Of us do that consumption, and then it deters us from creating because we engage in compare and despair. We look at what everybody else is doing online and we see control, highlight, glossy, you know, edited, filtered social media posts, and we compare what we're currently doing or our current state. And we feel inadequate. And that, I think, is one of the reasons why we don't go on and create, because we get bogged down in that compare and despair phenomenon. So. Yeah,
so true. I hosted, as we're recording this, I hosted my first, I'm doing a second one on Friday, but the first masterclass on finding your flow. And I talk about the five biggest creative blocks. And one of them was that comparison. You know, we compare our chapter one to everyone else's chapter 20. And it's just, we just do ourselves such a disservice and our creativity doesn't get the chance to spring forth as a result. Thank you so much for all of the gold you've shared, Christy. Is there anything else you feel like we should add before we wrap up this chat?
No, I'm just excited to be part of the Create Academy and share these insights, because the technology is not going away. So we can't bury our head and think that this is just a stage we're going through. If anything, the digital world is going to become more amplified, especially if sort of remote working becomes more of a permanent fixture. It's about finding realistic but research-based solutions, I think. So I'm delighted to be part of it and have loved chatting. So thank you.
Me too. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Christy, for sharing your incredible wisdom. I could have talked to you for hours on this topic. Maybe we'll do it again sometime. If you would like to follow Christy, you can follow her or you can go to her website at drchristygoodwin.com. She's also on Facebook and she's on Instagram as @drchristy. I'll also pop some of the links that she mentioned to the apps, and also I'll share that article on setting up your phone as well on the show notes of this episode. Reminder again that Create Academy is closing next Friday, the 12th of June, terms kicking off then. And if you'd like to get more information on that, you can jump on my Instagram. I've been talking about it quite a bit on Instagram. And you can also go to my website, lorrainemurphy.com.au. So thank you so much again for joining this week's episode. And I'm actually sharing a bonus episode with you on Monday. So keep an eye out for that as well. Have a brilliant weekend ahead. Thank you for being part of this week's episode. It was remarkable to have you. I am always keen to hear your thoughts, questions, ideas, and suggestions for future topics for the podcast. So please get in touch on Instagram. My handle is @LorraineRemarks, and through my website, lorrainemurphy.com.au. If you're enjoying what I'm putting out here, please do rate, review, or subscribe to the podcast so more people can find out about it and we can build this special community. Or even better, do all three. Chat to you next week.